Hello, and welcome to AfterTalk Live. I'm Lisa Bilgotten, co-founder of AfterTalk. We are www.aftertalk.com, an interactive grief and bereavement website where you can write to your deceased loved ones and share with others if you wish. Today's show is a book and author interview, and it's titled Meaningful Moments, Ritual Reflection When a Child Dies. First, I'd like to introduce our two wonderful guests, both co-authors of Meaningful Moments, Ritual and Reflection When a Child Dies, Rana Rimbo and Kathy Kobler. Their credentials are impressive. Rana is a PhD in RN, certified in perinatal loss care, and a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing, and is the associate director of Resolve Through Sharing, Bereavement and Advanced Care Planning Services at Gunderson Health System in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Kathy serves as an advanced practice nurse leader of the perinatal and pediatric palliative care programs at Advocate Children's Hospital in Park Ridge, Illinois. She is also a certified hospice and palliative pediatric nurse. She has her master's in the science of nursing and is a PhD candidate. Kathy has been caring for medically fragile and dying infants and children for 31 years. Ladies, it's quite a resume. Let's jump right in. Spiritually, there is no roadmap when a child is dying and has died. Your book, to me, in reading it, seems to be, it could be that roadmap for caregivers, for families. Rana, can you tell us a little bit about the book? And if, Kathy, you want to chime in, That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd be happy to, Lisa. Thank you very much for having us on today. Kathy and I wrote this book as an outgrowth of a paper that Kathy wrote on ritual when she was getting her master's degree. And I had been involved in a work group that was tackling that same subject. And she invited me to co-author an article for a journal along with Dr. Taryn Kavanaugh on ritual. And out of that writing came the idea that there's so much here, it can't be captured in a journal article. Should we do more with this and should we write a book? And so this was probably about a 7-year effort on our part.
Wow.
Because we wanted to capture the experience of families, the needs of families. We tried to make this something that those who care for families could use and find helpful in their work and perhaps help them look at things in a different way and provide care that was meaningful to the families at the time of their child's death. And so those thoughts and those intentions led to this book.
Just to make the outline for how you wanted it to unfold must have been challenging. How do you narrow down this kind of information, especially spiritual guidance? It's not a textbook. Can you walk us through how you leave the gate and tell me if I'm understanding it right? The words pause, reflect, acknowledge, and be mindful. Is that kind of how somebody kind of starts the process?
Thanks for asking.
Kathy, you can answer.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for asking and also for having us here. So I think when Rana and I were really thinking about moments where ritual can arise in clinical settings, one of the things that really came forward for us was the aspect that ritual is so closely linked to relationship. There's a deep human need to signify and acknowledge when important things happen in our lives. It's something that's been done by human beings across all ages. And when something important happens, we want to be able to to acknowledge that moment. And so Rana and I really were contemplating, and I was sharing stories with her about ways that I've watched ritual arise in clinical settings, and we were struck by the power of a moment. And in order for a health caregiver, in order for a parent to really be able to acknowledge those moments, we recognized there was a need to be able to pause, kind of take stock of where one is in that moment, reflect on the feelings or the thoughts one was holding in mind or in heart at the time, being able to acknowledge what one was feeling, and then being mindful of the relationship that was before you in order to move forward with creating a ritual. So really it's this model that we introduce at the beginning of the book called PRAM, which we hope sets the stage for reflection, and that's one of the things that's woven throughout the book are reflection points for the reader to draw them into where they are in the particular moment of whatever page they're on in the book, allowing them to gather their thoughts and be mindful really of how they might move forward with co-creating a ritual for a child, a family, or for a caregiver.
So can you, if you could define ritual for our audience in the context of loss, that basically what does ritual bring to the table when a child dies, and why do we need a ritual?
One of the things that, as Kathy mentioned, the idea of a moment is something that is inherent in the writing that we did and was inherent in our thinking. There was something on Facebook just a few weeks ago, and I think it was a Dr. Seuss quote, and it said, "Moments become memories." And I thought, wow, that's so much a part of what we were trying to accomplish as we wrote about ritual, because there may be moments, for example, to give an idea from the book, one of the photos we worked with, and Kathy has worked for many years with a photographer named Todd Hopeberg from the Chicago area. He shared several images with us for the book that represented ritual. And one of them that comes to mind often for me is one in which actually Kathy is part of this, but a little baby is dying. And the chaplain calls people together, and each of the staff reaches their hands out, and they are forming a circle around this baby, touching him. And then, although you don't see it in the photo, there is a second circle around the first circle as the goodbyes are said to this little baby. And to me, that is an example of how ritual grew out of this child's death, but it wasn't prescribed. Nobody said, this is now what we should do, or this is what you should do, but rather someone placed their hand on the baby and then everyone did. So
that's spontaneous. Spontaneous.
It comes from having a relationship, and it grows out of a moment. That would be probably the best way I could describe what a ritual is in the context that we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm. In this book, the rituals are given titles are called metaphors. Do I have it right?
That's part of the ways we decided to organize, because what you'll find throughout the book are really stories of how other families chose in the moment as they worked with their healthcare teams to honor their child at the time of death or in the moments prior to death. And so we really were working to organize some of them into themes. So and before we even talk about metaphors, I think an important point to make is that when people sometimes hear the word ritual, they think of the very wonderful and grounding rituals that can be associated with faith traditions, that can be associated with cultural beliefs or family traditions. And so those are very worthy and have a wonderful place in a family's journey when a child is dying. One of the things I've been struck by through the years is out of the context of relationship as healthcare providers and families are surrounding a child's bedside, the places where informal ritual unfolds. And this is where one of the concepts of what we talk a lot about of co-creation, and that being healthcare team members don't necessarily have to have all the right answers. They just need to ask the right drawing out questions. Help me to know mother or father. Help me to know child. What would be most important for you in this moment? What kind of things would you like to do? And I'll give an example of an informal ritual. I remember standing by the bedside of a young man who had taken a step to his right, and his body became a shield for a drive-by shooting bullet that struck him instead of his girlfriend. And he was being declared brain dead, and there was an organ donation team in his room, and lots of family was surrounding. And I watched as his girlfriend was standing at his bedside, and she was fiddling with the rail of his bed. And I went to stand next to her, and the hubbub of this room, she looked very focused. And I just asked a simple question, help me to know what you're thinking about right now. And she said, I need to get this down. Help me get this bed rail down. And I said, okay, and if you get it down, what would be important to you? And she said, well, and she looked at me with tears in her eyes. She said, when he hugged me, I fit perfectly under his chin, and I always heard his heartbeat. And she said, I need to get the side rail down. I need to hear his heart one more time. Oh, and so in this particular case, the instance of ritual became making a safe place for her, showing her how to push the button, how to put down the side rail, and I didn't know what she was going to do next. But she just gently laid forward, put her ear to his chest, and closed her eyes. And it didn't involve anything else other than myself just staying with her, and the room was still loud. Nobody changed what they were doing in the room, but I watched this young woman reconnect to a familiar sound from her past that grounded her in her present. And when she stood up, there was something about her that was transformed. And I think that's the absolute beauty of ritual, when we allow the participants to enter into it with their own intent, invite them to participate as they're comfortable, and allow the meaning finds them on their own. We don't have to worry about that part of it. We just need to create, a safe place for them to do what they need to do. And so for me, that's one example of an informal ritual. And all those metaphors in the book, so to tie back to your original question, all of those metaphors really were ways that we organize different types of informal rituals that we've seen happen in clinical settings.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. It is so interesting. Someone said to me, go to the part of you that knows. And it sounds like you gave this young woman opportunity to go to the place that knew, and that really became, she had knowing of what she had to do at that moment. She knew.
Yeah, I think that's been one of the most humbling things to learn about in this work. You know, as medical professionals, we come with a whole lot of training and expertise of our own, but really parents and loved ones of children of any age who are sick or dying, they hold their own wisdom based on that relationship with the child, and it's just our responsibility to draw that out, and often it's
a facilitator. You're a facilitator of their own intention.
And often it's with very familiar things. I can recall one family who their their tradition every night with all of their children was to read the story Good Night Moon. And as during their baby's prolonged hospitalization, the mom would actually call home and she would be reading the storybook to the baby in the hospital, as well as the other kids were listening by phone at home. So when it came time to enter into that unfamiliar place of this baby's dying, before the tube came out that was helping the baby to breathe, this family decided to connect with the very familiar Good Night Moon story, and they brought their own copy with, but they changed the words.
Beautiful.
So it was, Good Night Moon, Good Night NICU, Good Night Beeps and Buzzes, Good Night Nurses That We Love, and their story continued, individualized, and again, ritual served as that connecting point to them from what was familiar to an unfamiliar place, but yet surrounded the whole situation, which was still heartbreaking and sad, with just a love and a transforming presence in the room.
You know, ladies, I love the metaphors and the stories that make the metaphor and the ritual kind of come to life. And I just want to share with our audience some of the metaphor titles in the book are called Shifting Sands, Roots and Wings, Lament, Circles, Light, Angels. Well, I guess it goes angels, water, word, vision, and there's more, all brilliantly. Most stories honestly made me cry because really kind of like you're describing, you know, Kathy and Ron, at the opportunity that they presented. Would you be able to share some of the metaphors? And let me just say, I particularly loved, there is one story, is it the Bushick family, and how they ended up having the ritual. They named their baby that was born still years later, so they actually had the ritual, I guess, a couple of years after their baby died. Is that it? Am I getting it right?
They actually had two babies who were stillborn, and they named both of them 40-some years later as a way of...
40 years. I didn't realize that. Wow.
As a way of remembering. You know, their babies were born at a time when a baby's death by many people was considered a minor event and one that was not talked about. And so it was not as common in those days to name a baby, and they put the names on the baby's headstones. And it was a very symbolic and touching way of really feeling what Lori said was feeling that their family was complete.
Yes, I understand. Are there stories that you would like to share, the metaphors from the book?
I quickly, because the book not only talks about ritual for families, but also ritual for staff. And I think that Kathy has given us a tremendous amount of inspiration and ideas for how to help staff process death and grief, because they experience it every day. And one of the things that Kathy and I have done, we've done this with staff at workshops. Kathy has done it in her workplace, and I've actually done it with a group of professionals in South Africa. It always has the same result. It's about water, and that's one of the metaphors. But we fill a bowl with water, and those that are participating write on a piece of paper something that's troubling them, bothering them, healing the hope to arise from a piece of this on the paper, come forward with water. And what we hadn't told them was that the paper is what's called dissolving paper. And when they place their paper in the water and move it around a little bit, it disappears. It becomes part of the water. And our experience with that particular ritual with those who have a great deal of grief is that they're somewhat healed from that experience, that it feels like a moment where they've been able to give over the things that are causing such pain to the water, and their pain becomes one with the water.
How beautiful. Just how beautiful. I bet you it's very, very touching when they see, I guess you could say, their problems disappearing or their issue disappearing.
Mm-hmm. And I think what I found so touching and poignant was that the way this ritual went, being in South Africa, was not different from how it goes being with people down the street. In other words, I think there's a universality to that type of activity and that type of ritual. And it also, I think, highlights the applicability of ritual universally.
Yeah. Well, everybody has it, whether they're conscious of it or not, or whether they can pull it into whether it's religious, whether it's just their own, whether it's, you know, anywhere in the world. It's very, very interesting. Kathy and Ronnie, you've created a guide so powerfully connecting ways to create ritual and honor and continue relationships with the child who's passed. The depth of this book is just off the charts, and I hope that anyone who has lost a newborn or infant, child of any age, lost a pregnancy, or a child that was born still, will buy your book. If there is such a thing as completion when one has lost a child, meaningful moments will certainly, you know, bring some completion and solace. I think do you call it hope in your book? Is that what you call it?
No,
we go ahead, Kathy.
No, I was going to say it's that. Thank you. It is that aspect of being able to connect and honor relationship draws out or brings forward that aspect of hope that's always there as you hope for someone that you love. And it is that recognition or reconnecting with hope that we believe is so transformative about ritual. And I think that is been one of the most humbling things of, you know, to come at this first from a scholarly perspective and look at what the literature has said for years and years across anthropology and theology and psychology about the benefits of ritual, but then to watch it within clinical settings when really heartbreaking, hard things are happening, not only for families but for healthcare teams, and how ritual can be a common uniting, grounding place that can transform in individual ways. And when Rana was recounting the times we've incorporated ritual into presentations, and I think we always end up astounded, and I think of that at children's bedsides too. Like, we watch people just so moved by participating in ritual because they bring their own individual thoughts and feelings. We never know truly what they were holding in mind or what feelings arose for them unless they choose to tell us. But every single time we watch people come away changed and grateful for that opportunity to, again, pause, acknowledge, be reminded to reflect and be mindful of what's next. So we really hope that this book helps those who are hurting find a common ground, find a safe place to just be with their thoughts, with their feelings, with their experiences, and hopefully the ideas on this page will spark ways that the reader can incorporate ritual into their own journey.
Well, we are certainly going to be including a blog, about this interview on aftertalk.com. And you said that your book is currently available at bereavementservices.org. That's BEREAVEMENT services.org. And hopefully shortly soon it'll be available on Amazon. And, you know, if you keep us informed, we'll post that and also, put your book for sale on our website. If you'd like to contact, if any of our listeners would like to contact Kathy or Rana, the best email address is, if you want to share any of your stories, the best is ritualandreflection@gmail.com. So that's to share any stories anybody might have, ritualandreflection@gmail.com. But if there's any questions for Kathy or Rana, they should be sent to bereserv@gundersonhealth.org. That's GUNDERSON health.org. And we'll post all this on the website. So, I didn't say it clear enough, or, no one could get a pen quick enough. Kathy and Rana, thank you so much for writing this book. I think every caregiver should have it. Every kind of survivor of a child who's dying or has died should have this book. Thank you so much for tuning in today to After Talk Live. You can visit our website at www.aftertalk.com, where you can write your deceased loved ones and share with family and friends or a therapist. We've launched a wonderful new column called Ask Dr. Niemeyer, who's one of the foremost experts in grief and bereavement. You can write any question to Dr. Niemeyer you like. And I can say thank you very much, ladies, for being with us today. This is really an honor. Till the next time.
Thank you, Lisa.
The pleasure has been mine. Till the next time, wishing you well.